It's the dog days of summer, and probably wouldn't want to treat a dog like some people treat politics. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Glad to be back with you, Barry. I just want to say that, you know, I love my dog. Politics, not so much.
Well, and sometimes those things don't necessarily mix. and sometimes they do. But, you know, as we're going in here into the hot late days of August and heading into September, as we're facing what's historically known as the dog days of summer, as we're trolling down into a fall that, by all predictions that you're seeing, if you pay attention to any of the media, Chuck, is going to be very short, followed by a very long, hard winter, according to what, if you believe the Farmer's Almanac or the folks who swear by the Farmer's Almanac. You know, everybody's calling for this deep, heavy winter, and of course, now we're starting to talk about sunspots again, and maunder minimums, and the little ice age, and the question is, since you seem to have a pretty good handle on these type of things, are we heading for another little ice age, and should we just determine that anything that can be grown north of the Upper Peninsula in Michigan is what we can grow in our gardens for the next few years down here in the southern part of Ohio?
Well, the one thing we know about history is that there have been periods of warm times and there have been periods of cold times. And the number one driver of our climate has nothing to do with man-made carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases and this, that, and another thing. It has to do with the sun. The sun is the number one driver of the climate. And people, you know, I get into these discussions with people and I read some of the comments that are made about the fact that people say, well, there's no radiation differences when there's a lot of sunspots and when there's a few sunspots. And I'm like, it's not about total solar radiation at all. Isn't now, never has been. It's about cloud formation. And the fact is that cloud formation is not a proven fact, but there is a, shall we say, a heavy correlation with the amount of cosmic radiation that penetrates the outer radiation belt of the Earth. And the radiation belt of the Earth is caused by Earth's magnetic field. Well, the fact is that our clouds are caused by cosmic rays coming in and disturbing particles and causing them to begin to agglomerate, if you will, agglutinate, to use a trendy word, agglutinate, and they stick together, and you get condensation around them, and then cloud formation. Well, the more cosmic radiation, that is rays from outside the solar system, come in, then the more cloud formation you have. Well, when do you get periods of high cosmic ray penetration? You get it during sunspot minimums, because sunspots are generators of the solar wind, which comes in and causes the Van Allen belts to be active. That's why you see at sunspot maximums, you see lots and lots and lots of aurora borealis, because what the aurora, and if you live in the southern hemisphere, and I'm sure we don't have that many southern hemisphere listeners, but in the southern hemisphere, you get aurora australis. What that means is the southern lights. And what those are is at the poles, or near the poles, the flux lines of the magnetic field, now I'm getting really technical, the flux lines of the magnetic field gather those particles and discharge them. And you see that as those multicolored lights in the aurora, the aurora borealis is what we see, and some of these spectacular light shows in the sky. What happens when the sunspot minimums come in is you don't see those very often. Now, you do if you're way, 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 way up north. You still see them because there's some of that being generated, but when you really see them down here, it's during sunspot maxes and during solar storms and that kind of thing. So what's happening is that basically we're going through a period where the sun's quiet. I've been to, during the last sunspot minimum, you normally don't go to zero, but I've been in a place in Los Angeles up at the Griffith Park Observatory where they keep records up there of sunspot counts. And they actually have a heliograph up there, and you can see the surface of the sun. You look into a thing and you can actually see it. It filters out all the the intense light, and you can see the surface of the sun. And I can remember being up there and saying, oh, there's been none. And they, and one of the guides up there said, oh, there haven't been any for months. And I started paying really close attention, and there hadn't, and there weren't many 4 months after that. And I talked to people who were experts on it, and they said, oh yeah, that portends really cold weather. And it did. We went through a couple of really, really cold winters. So is the ice age coming? Well, I wouldn't trust the Farmer's Almanac, to be quite honest. I think counting the bands on woolly caterpillars and that kind of stuff is really not particularly accurate. However, it wouldn't shock me with the state of the current solar activity that we didn't have a cold winter.
Well, you know, Chuck, I may have to disprove that, because I've done some woolly caterpillar counting, and in my record keeping, 100% of the woolly caterpillars were woolly.
That's right.
That's about all you can say about it.
Yeah. You know, it's the number of bands, you know, if they, depending on how many colors they had on them and all that stuff. That's the legend. It doesn't seem to work
out.
And
they only really have two colors. It's brown and it's black.
Yeah, it's brown and black. And yeah. In fact, I haven't seen that many woolly caterpillars, so, but we should see them out here.
Not lately.
No, we should see them out here, because we've got moths all over the place, and a lot of those things eventually become moths. We've got beautiful moths out here. I've had, we've counted a number of big, giant imperial moths that with bodies the size of my thumb who are out here, and we've had 6 or 7 Luna moths this year. We've had Cyclops moths. We've had giant, just beautiful leopard moths. My gosh. The only bad part is that when you get this many moths, they can get in and eat your suit, which we don't want.
No, you don't want that. Well, you know, Chuck, just like the Farmer's Almanac, sometimes we have to be careful in politics, too, of not buying the first reports that come out. After the Democratic convention, the word was that, oh, you know, the GOP is in trouble and Donald Trump is tanking and Hillary Clinton's up by 15 points. And so that spelled the doom and gloom and the end of the Republican Party and the sure, completely guaranteed ascension of Hillary Clinton to the White House. Not so fast, because just like the weather that changes ahead of the predictions, the polling has changed as well. Just saw a shock poll that was put out just recently. And this poll, which is a daily track, which is coming from the University of Southern California and the LA Times together. They're doing a daily tracking poll. And yes, at one point, Hillary had a fairly significant jump on Clinton right after, or excuse me, Hillary hit on Trump right after the convention. However, as of just, and I believe this was as early as today, the tracking is showing that Hillary Clinton is leading Donald Trump by less than 1 percentage point. It's 44 to 43.4, making the race way too close to call this far out, which we're still almost 90 days out from the election. And showing that maybe people are missing something here. You know, we've had, you and I have talked about this before, that there have been a number of, well, I wouldn't necessarily call them household names, but more respected, I guess, is a way, or more recognized. Thank you. That's probably the best word. More recognized Republican operatives who are publicly stating their complete lack of support for the Republican nominee, Donald Trump, and some who've even gone so far to say as that they are going to cross party lines and vote for Hillary Clinton for president. Well, that gets people's hands wringing, you know, gloom and doom, it's all over with again. But again, the situation that's showing itself is that these elite Republicans don't represent the average voter that is out there, that most likely, as we saw from the primaries, and, you know, I'd love to have your analysis on this too, Chuck, as we saw from the primaries, turned out in droves to support what they consider to be non-traditional candidates, like Donald Trump on the Republican side and like Bernie Sanders, the independent, who was running for the Democratic nomination. I'm believing that the pundits are missing something that the polling's starting to pick up on, and that is that I believe people are desperate for a change from the status quo, from politics as usual. And this may actually bode well for someone whose last name is either Trump, or it could bode well for third-party candidates like Gary Johnson, or to a more limited extent, maybe Daryl Castle from the Constitution Party. Although I don't see either one of those two actually most likely ascending, getting enough electoral votes to ascend to the presidency. I do believe this may be a banner year for a third-party presidential candidate.
I've seen some polls out there that show both Gary Johnson and Jill Stein pulling significant percentages, which is why you're only seeing the two major party candidates' numbers adding up to 87%.
Thank you. Exactly. Thank you for pointing that out, because that's showing that at least 12.5% of the vote is going somewhere else right now, whether it's not committed yet or it's committed to a Jill Stein who's running on the Green Party to the left of Hillary Clinton, or to a Gary Johnson who's running on the Libertarian ticket to the, well, I'm not sure which side of Donald Trump that would put him on.
Gary Johnson is a, well, the whole Libertarian Party, to say the least, is a strange slumgullion of sort of incoherently connected views. Sorry out there if you're a Libertarian, but there doesn't seem to be a cogent worldview attached to some of the positions.
Well, you know, I want to riff on that just slightly, and I'm sorry if I'm taking us kind of on a tangent here. But one of the big things that have been coming up lately, and I've been, you know, seeking and looking on my social media feeds to see how my libertarian-leaning friends are handling this, is that their national ticket of Gary Johnson and former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld seem to be talking at odds to each other. Johnson is a very interesting admixture of positions here. You know, you've got Gary Johnson, who's, you know, fiscally conservative, but leaning more socially liberal and socially libertarian. And then you had, and this still puzzles me, Chuck, and I think I'm starting to figure it out. I think I'm seeing the outlines of the sketch of what was really going on here. But you know, ever since the Libertarian Convention, I have wondered why Bill Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts, was picked to be Gary Johnson's running mate. Well, what you have right now and what's going on in the social media sphere is a bit of an uproar, even among some more thoughtful libertarians, about the fact that their vice presidential candidate just basically came out and said that he's for banning guns, which is not
a libertarian position.
If you're a consistent libertarian, that's not a consistent position as a libertarian, is to ban firearms. That's one area that where their fiscal policy and their social policy all kind of line up. And they believe that it's not the government's role to have any kind of regulation or restriction upon a person's individual right to protect themselves. But their vice presidential candidate is out there basically calling everything an assault weapon or a weapon of mass destruction, even down to your small protective handgun that you might have your wife carry in her bag or purse, the little 32s or 380s. Well, he's an anti-gunner from the get-go, and as a former a Republican governor of Massachusetts, similar to a Mitt Romney, is really sounding much more like a rank-and-file Democrat than a rank-and-file libertarian.
Well, that should surprise no one. That's the only way to win in Massachusetts. Basically, you have to be a far-left Republican to even get a smell of winning, as Mitt Romney was. Remember, we've talked about it on our show over and over and over again. And while Mitt Romney was running, and people would say, "You need to stop. You need to shut up about that." The grandfather of Obamacare was Mitt Romney. The guy who really started the ball rolling on homosexual marriage was Mitt Romney. Bottom line, this is the man that everybody told us we had to vote for, or we'd get something far worse. And I'm like, I don't think that's possible. Am I saying that Mitt Romney would have been as bad as Barack Obama? In some ways, no, but in some ways, yes. Because what happens when a Republican is in what's considered to be the top office in the land, and I don't consider the president to be the top office. But anyway, editorial comment to be explained at some later time. People tend to relax and don't watch as closely, and sort of left-wing Republican pundits get away with saying things that are ridiculous about how this is really a conservative value. You can't do that when there is a screaming, all but admitted Marxist in the White House. Everybody suddenly discovers that the Constitution says this and the Constitution says that. Barry, you and I have said for a long time, the Constitution is a curtain that people hide behind and a shibboleth that they sort of bring out and shake around when they find things in it that support their position, and they put it back in their back pocket when they find things that are against their position. And case in point was this Gold Star father at the Democratic Convention who shook that Constitution around and talked about how the religious test clause meant that immigration couldn't be based on religion. Immigration can be based on anything Congress decides it can be based on. The religious test has to do with office, and the original intent of the religious test was not to restrict office to people of different denominations. Christian Correct. Denominations. It was never assumed that Hindus and Muslims and other religious groups would ever really be interested in coming here because they based it on Christian governmental values. Well, how far we've come from that. But that said, guys like Mitt Romney, as much as they attempted to make him a conservative, he was not. He was a progressive leftist Republican. And I want to bring up here, Barry, we should wrench our arms out of the sockets doing this, but we need to congratulate ourselves in pointing out what we saw coming, and that was members of the Republican Party elite running over each other to get away from the Republican candidate because he doesn't fit their criteria. And if you'll recall, you and I have been criticized in the past because we refused to support George W. Bush. We refused to support John McCain. We refused to support Mitt Romney. And we were basically sort of treated like the people who haven't been potted yet in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You know, they all scream and point at you in the street. That's the kind of treatment that we got. Well, we said this is going to be like the 2006 Ohio Republican gubernatorial election. And what's going to happen is that people know they can't control the candidate, don't like the candidate, and therefore they would rather vote for Hillary than vote for Donald Trump.
Yes.
Now, you and I aren't caught in that trap because those aren't the only two choices as far as we're concerned.
No, that's true.
There are other people out there, and among them Stein and Johnson, neither of which I think you would find neither of which we would support either. But they're also not the only choices. There are lots of other choices, and I had someone tell me they were now. Okay, this is a friend of mine who I haven't spoken with in a while, but he told me he was either going to vote for Donald Trump because he's given the Republican Party such a hot foot, which is an attractive reason, but it's too short-term in my view. It's too short-term of view. Or he was going to write in Judge Roy Moore. And I said,
okay.
Well, he's not running. Well, he says, I'd write him in anyway. And I said, well, if you want your vote to count, because Judge Roy Moore is not actually running for president, I would vote for one of the third party candidates who's probably not going to have write-in status in Ohio. And he just said, no, I would vote for Moore or Trump just because of what he's doing to the Republican Party from the inside. And I'm like, yeah, again, I'm not going to be critical of your reasoning. However, I think that the 4 years after the election, you're going to say, oh my gosh, what did I do? That's where I am on that kind of thing. That's why I have problems with leftists like Mitt Romney, because Trump is not Romney and McCain were both leftists. They're progressives. There's just no doubt about that. That's why they had the support, the complete support of groups like this 50 quote-unquote national security experts who came out and said,
yes.
Basically, those guys came out, and I saw someone put it in a comment that was perfect. They said, these 50 guys and women never saw a war they didn't fall instantly and madly in love with. And that's true. That's why everybody had a hemorrhage when Trump came out with his foreign policy speech and said, the day of nation building is over. It's a gross failure. And he's correct. We can't build nations. Who builds nations, Barry?
Well, God sets up kings, and he builds up nations, and he takes down nations.
Exactly. So here we are as a political entity, the United States of America, and our quote-unquote allies, attempting to do what only God can do, and that is force people to live together in harmony under a democratic umbrella, quote-unquote democratic, when in fact what happens is, what always happens in a democracy, the strongest faction ends up in control, and it ends up with its boot on the neck of the weakest factions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way democracies work. That's why the United States isn't a democracy, it's a republic, although we are rapidly switching over. We are in the birth pangs, actually we're past the birth pangs, of going switching over to a democracy, which is not a good thing.
No, it's absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that our founders, when they put together the governing documents for this country, were studiously trying to avoid, was having this become a democracy, because they understood the destructive and self-destructive forces that democracy bring. So, but you know, we've got a situation here now, Chuck, that you know, these are your potential choices out there on the ballot. But as I talked to you offline, I had to laugh a little bit because all of these, whether it's national security experts or whether it's folks like John Kasich, or now I just saw the latest, Montel Williams, who was a Kasich supporter, who's now publicly stating he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. These people just, I don't think they're getting it. I think that they have been through the establishment ride for so long that they don't understand that the road has changed underneath of them. And I think that the polling's starting to show that. And something that the Trump campaign did just this week, I think actually hat tips that maybe he's a little bit more politically shrewd than most people are giving him credit for, especially those in the Republican establishment. Because this week, there was a shakeup in the Donald Trump for president campaign. And his former campaign chairman, CEO, you know, the guy who's at the head of the campaign calling all the shots, and that's a consultant rather than the campaign manager, because the manager is just, manager's underneath the big consultant. Let's just end these big campaigns.
Right.
But this guy, his name was Paul Manafort. And Paul Manafort is a longtime GOP operative, and he's had his fingers in a lot of pots. Well, Trump has just, as he did earlier with his former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, who got into some trouble, he started pulling some of Manafort's responsibilities and handing them off to a couple of other people. Well, just this week they formalized it when Trump announced that Steve Bannon, who is a bigwig and was the chairman of Breitbart News, which is an online news source that you and I have looked at and pulled some articles from time to time to talk about. But Breitbart News has been pro-Trump since the early days of the primaries. And Steve Bannon, who's the chairman of Breitbart News, is now the head of the Trump campaign. Obviously, he's stepping away from Breitbart for that, but he's there and he's doing this. And then Kellyanne Conway, who is a fairly noted conservative pollster, is now the campaign manager for Donald Trump's campaign. Now, Chuck, the one thing you can say about these two are they're not establishment elite insiders.
Right.
Neither one of these two people would be considered on the internal Republican establishment track, unlike Paul Manafort, who was an establishment guy. And the reason Trump's campaign gave for making the switch was that these two people got Donald Trump intrinsically. They understood him and they were going to let him be himself. Whereas Manafort and company were trying to manipulate and force him into a box in order to fit their view of the way a candidate should behave. Now, Chuck, I probably couldn't have asked for a more refreshing piece of news than that to say, okay, now we're going to be, as a partisan, and you know what, we say that we're unbiased on the show, and we are. We attack all sides equally. But really, when push comes to shove, you know, I align as a Christian constitutional conservative more with the, if you've only got the two choices, with the Republican side of the ticket rather than the Democrat side of the ticket, mainly on social issues, except when the Republicans are just giving lip service to their platform, which they always do.
Always.
And you realize that the person really doesn't share your values, then I'm like, basically it's open season at that point. But I'm really excited now for the first time in forever in a presidential race to actually see some real bare knuckle getting down to the gut instinct level fight between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, who I believe Clinton's camp just agreed before this change came up. They had just agreed to a series of three national debates. Oops.
Yeah.
I think the Clinton camp. And, of course, they went apoplectic upon the announcement of Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway being the new heads of the Trump campaign, more so than you would think would be necessary for an opponent to be worried about who the personnel is behind the candidate.
Barry, this is so interesting because, honestly, you don't have to look very far to find out that the Clinton campaign machine is apoplectic over the changes in the Trump campaign. Mook, who is a Clinton campaign official, got on Rachel Maddow, a show on MSNBC, and of course known here as Rachel Madcow. He basically conspiracy theories, talked about nothing but conspiracy theories. Trump's a bully. Bannon's a bully. Bannon's the new campaign head over at on the Trump side. He basically melted down, and Hillary also apparently had a kind of a tantrum, screaming about racist anti-Semites. Oh my gosh, if there's anybody who's not a racist anti-Semite, I would think it would be Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't care what religion, race, color you are,
gender or sexual preference.
He really doesn't care, man. If you're good at what you do, he hires you. That's the bottom line.
And again, when the campaign announced that the reason why this shakeup was being made was because Trump was feeling like he wasn't being given full information, that they were spinning him when these things came out, not telling him the full truth, and trying to box him in, I sit there and realize that Donald Trump has better political savvy as a businessman than most politicians do when the establishment intelligentsia class tries to basically fit you into their mold. And that's exactly what Manafort was trying to do, was fit Trump into the Republican establishment mold in order to court these establishment Republicans who are basically showing that they're just opportunists to start with, and they, as soon as things don't go their way, they're willing to jump ship and defect to the opposite party and support their enemies against people who are supposedly working with them.
Yeah, well,
now, if that isn't a wake-up call for the rank and file of Republicans in this country to take another hard look at their politicians and find out where they're standing. Now, again, you know, I'm saying this from a position that I can't vote for Donald Trump, okay? But I've never acted like I could vote, nor did I ever act like I could vote for anybody the Republican Party put forward as a presidential candidate, because I have principles and standards that I have to hold to in order to basically, once I come out of a voting place of a ballot box, be able to feel like I can justify my pick before God, which is who's my ultimate arbiter of whether I'm doing something right or wrong. But I really am serious about this whole idea that, you know, Republican voters really should keep track and keep tabs of all of these Republicans, especially office holders, who are actively moving to the other camp. Because, really, I mean, what you're really seeing is a situation that many, many voters, especially Republican voters, especially those who have previously not been heavily engaged in politics or even voting because they just felt like there was no difference between the parties, being vindicated. they're perfectly right in many of the instances when you have Republican office holders saying they're voting for a Democrat for president. Now, what's really surprising about that, Chuck? Nothing.
Yeah.
you know, the only difference between now and in the past was that they would get their way and get their nominee, and then they would end up, you know, when push came to shove and it looked like their nominee was just not going to make it, many of them probably still voted for the Democrat. They just didn't do it publicly. Now they're doing it publicly because, well, they're like little children throwing a temper tantrum. They didn't get their way, and so they're going to take their toy, their vote, and go play in somebody else's sandbox with it.
Look, here's the deal. These guys are hoping, praying, hoping against hope that it's a Trump loss, and it's a landslide loss. In fact, I watched the thing on the Washington Post today. It said the top 10 anti-Trumpers in the Republican Party, very neocon to the man, every one of them. It was Lindsey Graham, Mitt Romney, lesser knowns, basically to a man, talking about how Trump's going to walk away from this, be lucky not to be the biggest loser in American politics history, blah, 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 blah. Well, look, I'm looking at numbers right here, sort of unofficial, people taking polls at, for instance, the Iowa State Fair, just for, you know, one state. Some of the official polls don't show numbers that look like this, but at the Iowa State Fair, poll results, Donald Trump 56, Hillary Clinton 44. Now, since those numbers add up to 100%, it's rather obvious to me that there were two choices given.
Right, exactly.
And I know how I answer those. When somebody comes up to me and asks me those, which one do you pick? Neither. Well, that doesn't fit. You know, that's not on the form, and therefore I can't fill it out. Well, I just walk away. I don't pick one or the other in those kind of cases. But there are people who will say, well, if I had to choose between the two, which I don't, I would pick, and 56% picked Donald Trump, 44%, only 44 picked Hillary Clinton in Iowa. What does that mean? Well, it may mean a lot. It may not mean anything. You know, the demographics, state fair attenders, I think, tends to be a little more conservative.
Especially in a state like Iowa.
In a state like Iowa. And Iowa is not a conservative state. Not really. If you look at their record, they're a lot like Wisconsin. Wisconsin had a strong record of electing Republicans, but they were progressive Republicans. Robert La Follette comes to mind. Robert La Follette was nothing like the for instance, a contemporary politicians Harding and Coolidge, but Harding and Coolidge, who were, you know, for the most part, modern day conservatives. They were a lot mm-hmm. more constitutional. Robert La Follette wasn't anything sure. like a constitutional or a conservative. He was a screaming progressive, and he was a sort of a remnant of the days when the party switched places, and that was the election of 1916, the election to sit home for, also 1912, the two elections to really sit home for. There were no decent candidates on the ballot. The most I have to laugh about this. I tell people, I said, do you realize that the most conservative candidate on the ballot in 1912 was Woodrow Wilson?
Yeah, it's pretty sad to think about.
Yeah. So but that being said, you know, I've never trusted polls. Although there are people who come out and say, well, they're always right on the money. Well, not always. And there are some that are better than others. And
no, not always.
Yeah, agreed. You know, John Zogby for a long time ran the most accurate poll. I don't know if it still is or not. Some of the worst polls were like a Gallup. I mean, if you wanted to make it look like a certain thing had huge support, you just hired Gallup, because Gallup would basically come up with the numbers that you wanted. And I can remember, you know, and we shouldn't be running government by poll anyway. And polls only serve to give campaign higher-ups and strong supporters ulcers. That's basically all polls do, until the day when the real poll is taken, and that is the day you go in and push the button or flip the lever or do the punch card. That's the real poll that counts. And sometimes polls don't matter. The famous headline, Dewey defeats Truman. Well, how come President Dewey doesn't show up in the list? Because he lost. And the reason lost is that basically there were so many people convinced the weather was really bad on that election night all over the country. And so many Republicans were convinced by polls that their guy was going to win, they didn't bother to go out and vote.
Oops.
Yeah. How'd that work out? Yeah. Not so well. So, Trump, the numbers don't mean much to me right now. And what's interesting about the 10 days ago, they were telling us, well, it's all over because Hillary has a 10.5% lead and that kind of thing. Well, Barry, the latest shock polls are showing that Hillary has a half-point lead.
Yeah, but just about a half point, which means race is too close to call. It's within the margin of error, so it's a complete toss-up, and anybody could win at this point, among the two, obviously. So, you know, you're sitting in a situation where anything that happens from this point out could have a, you know, unless it's something completely, you know, way out of line. Of course, the media will try to make it out of line. It looks to me like the Trump campaign is probably on a fairly solid footing to moving toward winning this race. Changing up your campaign team in order to get people who basically are willing to, you know, get down in the trenches and really fight the fight. Having a non-traditional campaign, which has fired a lot of people up in the primary and looks like it's continuing to fire people up regardless of which way you feel about it into the general election. And then basically being able to take on Hillary Clinton directly for numerous things, from the Clinton Foundation to the Secretary of State to the email scandals to Benghazi to to the fact that of the DNC email leaks and everything that was going on during that time. I mean, if let's just take a 30,000 foot look at it, Hillary Clinton doesn't have an awful lot to hold on to right now.
No. No.
I mean, it really is, I think, up in the air. You know, the question is, are people going to land at the end of the day and it's going to be disaffected establishment moderate Republicans who will push her over the top? Because ultimately, she's going to be losing support from her far left base, who were Bernie Sanders supporters and who, even though Bernie, you know, through whatever deal they pulled, gave her an endorsement, are most likely going to either going to go to Gary Johnson or to Jill Stein, and some are going to go to Trump. You know, the fact is she's got to make that up from somewhere, and right now it looks like where she's going to be making it up from are establishment Republicans. And if Hillary Clinton wins, and after the voting is all counted and the things are all parsed, if it's shown that moderate establishment Republicans were the winning coalition for a Democrat president, I do believe you might be looking at a complete realignment, if not the utter dismantling of the Republican Party in this country.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, it didn't lead to that in Ohio after Blackwell. The same people, I mean, how many people remember that Kevin DeWine, who was the Republican Party chair? I don't know who the Republican Party chair is in Ohio now.
Matt Borges.
Matt Borges, that's right.
Handpicked by the Kasich team.
Yeah, if you recall, Kevin DeWine, basically after, I think it was after the Romney debacle, came out, and we did a show on this when we played the interview and parsed it, where the whole film of the meeting, where he basically came out and threw conservatives under the bus.
Yep.
It's all our fault. And they're right. It was all our fault. And it was all our fault because we couldn't support a guy that was shoved down the throat of the Republican Party by Republican Party elites. That's what they're mad about. And it shows that the Republican Party is really I'm going to say a non-viable coalition of two different groups. It's Democrats who basically want the Republicans to be more Democratic versus you know, Republicans who want the Republican Party to show Republican and conservative and constitutional distinctives. And those two factions, that's an oil and water mix. They cannot see eye to eye. It's not going to happen. And that's why you're seeing a lot of Trump supporters who are very disaffected coming out and talking about the Uniparty, meaning that the Democrats and Republicans are essentially the same thing. And I think I've said this before. Mm-hmm. You know, what these guys want is a system where there's a center line. Some people walk the center line. Some people walk 5 inches off the center, you know, to the left or to the right off the center line. But for the most part, there's a center line, and they want to steer where the line goes. Well, the Trump people are seeing their chance to basically get somebody who refuses to walk the line. And those who are the gatekeepers, those who are the line painters, if you will, don't like the fact that people aren't falling inside their line and walking just to the right or to the left or down the center of their line. And they are demanding, and they said, well, if you won't come over back onto the line, we'll go over to the person who's 5 inches to the left of the line, because that's closer to us anyway. That should be as clear as day. And it should be clear as day to anyone. You know, if you hear someone has the Republican Party endorsement in your state and local races or your congressional race, you should really be closely examining this person, because chances are he walks probably down the center of the line or just 5 inches to the right of the line instead of being refusing to toe the line. That's the problem we have. That's how in Westerville I got terrible state representation in people like Ann Gonzalez, who basically was a Republican Party, part of the Republican Party machine there. And that's where they come up. A lot of these people come up out of city councils and that kind of thing. Especially, you know, Westerville has a reputation for having... and I don't live there anymore, and this is one of the reasons why, has a reputation for being quote-unquote nonpartisan. Well, that's a joke. A lot of the both Democratic and Republican Party machine operatives come out of those small elections, and all you got to do is look at Westerville politics, and you can see it's heavily Republican, and some of the worst Republicans we have in the machine come out of places like Westerville. Worthington, name a suburb, and some of the worst sections of the Democratic machine come out of places like Toledo, Youngstown, Cleveland, certain suburbs of Columbus, certain suburbs of Cincinnati. Yep. I mean, they rise up out of the nonpartisan ranks, and you can see where their leanings are. Because you can see where the Republican Party suddenly comes out and endorses these people. Well, they've done the interviews, and the interviews are run by progressives in the Republican Party, which is the Ohio Republican Party is a progressive party, and they're who get the endorsements, and other people are left in the dust, and you basically can't get. Yeah, every once in a while, there's an upset. And the Republican Party hates it. And you can see that in the state legislature. You get guys who are actually trying to do the right thing, and they get shoved off into their own caucuses. You know, they have to caucus by themselves.
Either that, or they're not given endorsements, as happened in the spring with two or three different Republican legislators, because they wouldn't pony up tens of thousands of dollars to the caucus for them to use on other candidates who they didn't agree with philosophically.
Yeah, big surprise. But doesn't matter if you really are against our agenda, you still have to support it, or you will not get the endorsement of the party. Is basically what you get. So what you get is radical support for John Kasich, who proved himself to be, and is continuing to prove himself to be, an ultra-progressive. And yet you still got people in the state legislature who are there at the behest of Kasich and continuing to support him. I assume that he is planning on running for Senate against Sherrod Brown in a couple years. I'm personally hoping his career is dead after how he conducted himself in the presidential race. And if you don't recognize the fact that John Kasich really thought he was the anointed guy and that somehow he was going to pull off a miracle in Cleveland and be acclaimed by the convention because he had, quote-unquote, had friends on the Rules Committee, what's that tell you basically about how Republicans think about how things ought to be run? If the people are against your candidate, that doesn't matter because the party elites will make sure they get the nomination or the endorsement anyway. And that's the way these people think.
It's true. It's sad, but it's true. And you talked about a little bit about, what Kasich might be doing in a couple of years. He's not the only one who is looking at 2 years out from now, and I wanted to segue into some of our state issues, because after the dust settles in November, and like I was saying earlier, the sun will come up on November the 8th, just like it did on November the 7th, and the only thing that will be different is we might have a better idea of who's going to be, handling the executive administration of the government, the federal government, for the next 4 years. But probably within a week after that dust settles, most people will be focusing on what's happening in Ohio in 2018, because that's when all of our statewides are up for re-election. Well, actually not re-election, new election, because all five of our statewide office seats, governor, secretary of state, attorney general, treasurer, and auditor, all will have to have new people in the seats because of term limits. So there's a scramble already, and you've got people lining up, and right now we knew for sure that three different state office holders are looking to run to replace John Kasich as governor. And those would be Mike DeWine, who's the Ohio Attorney General, John Husted, the Ohio Secretary of State, and Mary Taylor, who is the Lieutenant Governor. Those are the presumptive and, not quite completely announced yet, but all but announced, even to the point that DeWine just hired a campaign consultant who just recently came off the Kasich campaign to signal very clearly that he's definitely running for governor. But we've got just this week, and I saw an article coming out of the Cleveland paper, that a sitting congressman now has either directly or allowed indirectly his name to be used in a push poll to determine whether or not he might be a viable candidate for governor. That's Congressman Jim Renacci out of the Medina County, Wayne County, going up in toward Cleveland area. Renacci he kind of drew a little bit. He's been kind of a nondescript kind of congressman so far, basically voting for whatever John Boehner and now Paul Ryan wanted him to. And until he did something here just recently, in the last few weeks, that kind of raised the ire of a number of conservatives around him, and that was the fact that he voted in favor of amendments to add sexual orientation, non-discrimination, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As part of 43 GOP congressmen who basically wanted to try to codify Obama's transgender policies. There was an attempt made to put an amendment into a bill in Congress, and Renacci was one of 43 Republican congressmen who voted in favor of adding this to basically put into statute Obama's bathroom mandate. And so Renacci, who, again, is a congressman from Northeast Ohio, and who really has shown himself to be not as deep a friend to conservatives as he'd like to paint himself to be, Because, you know, all Republicans who run for Congress are conservative, Chuck. It's just, it goes without saying, right?
Wrong.
Or at least they'll tell you that. They'll tell you that in their literature. That's
they have
for sure.
to, yeah. All you have to do is watch Rob Portman's reelection advertisements. And I'm a great conservative. No, well, no, you're not.
Common sense conservative, compassionate conservative, yeah. consistent conservative, concerned conservative, conserving conservative, whatever the qualifier is in front of it, it just basically means I'm not conservative.
Exactly.
Anytime you see words in front of the word conservative as a descriptor, just replace that word in front of conservative with the word not.
Yeah.
So not conservative. That's right. That's exactly what it means. That's just that's your handy dandy little political insider tip for the week.
Well, now I mean, this is sad. I'm just as a sidebar. I'm watching some of these, and we're down to arguing about basically needle replacement programs. Portman voted against some kind of needle replacement and, you know, some kind of drug recovery program, and that's the big thing we're going to get him on. So give me a break. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, no. I mean, it gets crazy. But here, so Renacci, there's a poll that goes out that's done by a third party in Ohio, and it's a push poll. Basically, a push poll is where you basically, you know, you put stuff out about people that you want to get support raised for and make them look really, really good. You know, you highlight some of the things that you think voters would like about them. Or you highlight things about the other candidates that voters may not like. And so they did this. They put this poll out here, and they tested alongside the three candidates who were already basically all but announced. They added Jim Renacci into this mix to find out how strong his name is or how strong he might be in a statewide race. Now, Chuck, the vast majority of the time, pollsters are not wasting their time just, you know, they don't have anything better to do because the conventions are over with and they didn't get hired by the presidential campaigns. So they don't go out there and run polls just because they, you know, they get a whim or a bad cup of coffee and they're like, Jim Renacci, I wonder what he'd do. So let's go out and run a poll and just because I'm assuaging my own personal curiosity on this. They're paid to do this, okay? Pollsters are paid big money to do this, either directly by candidates or by PACs associated with the candidates who are trying to build a case for support. Jim Renacci is looking to move up, Chuck. Whether it's the U.S. Senate seat in 2 years and he's trying to get himself lined up as an alternative, whether it's one of the statewides in Ohio that are open. But, you know, the point is, Renacci's basically a backbencher in Congress. He's not the, you know, dean of the caucus. He doesn't have very, you know, he's got some appointments, but the committees he's on, he's not chairman of committees. They're not plum spots. And, you know, he's not the brightest star in the GOP congressional firmament, because that would be guys like Pat Tiberi, you know, your former congressman, and maybe current. No, or
he's my current congressman. Yeah, we're still.
Oh, that's right. No, it does go over there. Okay. Yeah that's
we're,
right.
We're so, in Pat's
so,
district.
So, you know, the Pat Tiberis or the Steve Stivers of the world, those are the guys that, you know, the party wants to elevate. And Renacci, although, you know, one of his claimed fames is he has an awful lot of money, which obviously puts him in play in any Republican establishment circles, is that he's testing it out to figure out if it's worth it for him to leave a safe congressional seat to run for something else. And,
yeah.
You know, that's great, and that's all well and fine, and good luck. But you know what? Go ahead and embrace it and be honest about it. Just say up front, yeah, I'm out there having polls run, instead of, you know, playing coy about it. That's the thing that gets me about these people. They play coy about this stuff. And, you know, what we're getting into is we're in a political environment now where playing coy can cost you an election. Now, I'm okay with that because, honestly, I'm not a big fan of Jim Renacci. I've never have been. He's one of those folks who, he came from out of nowhere. The party establishment got around him because he had lots of money, and then they painted him to be a, you know, conservative, and
rock
many
rib,
voters
yeah.
who didn't know anything about him and didn't know where to look or didn't have the time or the interest to do some digging into his background went ahead and elevated him to Congress. I mean, you know, he came straight from the business community straight to Congress. And that should tell you something about, you know, where his, you know, foundations are going to be, and they're going to be with people who can support him financially, because that's what it takes to get into Congress straight okay. out when you're not already building a political machine.
That thing you brought up at the beginning of your talk on Jim Renacci says everything about it, because that thing about slipping in an amendment, to codify,
The transgender issues,
that's pandering to the money base. That is pandering to the GOP money base right there, flat out. That's exactly what it is. The only reason he did that was because somebody told him he could cash in by doing it. That is sad. And that is what is wrong at this point. It's all about money. It's all about reelection. And it's all about stepping up the step to the next step. You may find that isn't the next Senate and the next gubernatorial race are different by a year? Is that not correct? Aren't we an odd year?
No. Oh, gosh. No.
Oh, the
U.S.
same
Senate
year.
And the gubernatorial race are both in 2018.
Yeah, okay. Some states have the odd year thing.
Right. No, Ohio doesn't. Ours fall on even years.
That's right.
Just whether it's a 2-year gap between the Senate seats being open or a 4-year gap between them coming open. So, but they're always on the even years. And so in some cycles, they fall right on the same year as the gubernatorial race. And in some years, they fall 2 years after.
Right. Right. So he's got to make up his mind. Is he running for Senate or is he running for governor?
Exactly. And considering the fact that the field's pretty crowded right now for governor, he may be throwing that out there in order to get the GOP in Ohio, the Matt Borges of the world, to pay attention to him and to start offering to broker deals to clear the way for him to get a statewide seat other than governor. You know, and that could be, you know, he may actually come back and run for treasurer or for secretary of state rather than run for governor. But, you know, again, it's a situation where a lot yet to be determined, and I really actually didn't hear the result of the poll yet to see if he had any name ID, which I don't think he does. And so this was a way to grab some slightly paid for media, because you paid for the poll, but you didn't have to pay the press to cover you on the poll. And to get your name out there and to get your name in the buzz cycle and get the party paying attention that you can possibly come up and be a stalking horse of some sort.
Well, who all is running for governor, Barry? I guess I don't know the whole list.
Okay. All right. Well, right now, the candidates who are presumptively understood to be running for governor include the Attorney General, Mike DeWine, the Secretary of State, John Husted, and Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor, who have all expressed interest in running, and who likely will, you know, continue. Mike DeWine just hired a campaign consultant to work with the Kasich campaign to handle his outreach for his exploratory for governor. Husted has made no bones about the idea that he'd like to be governor. And, of course, Mary Taylor's presumptive because as lieutenant governor now, you know, there's a potential that, you know, she'll have a base of support moving in to elevate her to the top seat. It's completely up in the air.
Sure.
We don't know what's going to fall down between now and the filing deadline in December of 2017 for the 2018 race. And so, you know, a lot of things could change. There could be brand new names come into the mix. There could be a lot of names fall off. My prediction is there'll probably only be two by the time we get down to it for a primary, legitimate contenders who have a chance, and that's most likely going to be DeWine and Kasich. DeWine and Husted.
Husted, yeah. Well, both of whom have been in meetings where you and I were involved, and both of whom were not warmly received by evangelicals for very good reason. Mike DeWine, most recently, who basically came in to try to, I think, mend fences and walked away tail between legs, realizing that he was toast in the evangelical leadership community, at least. That's been about a year ago. Yes. You and I went to that thing. That did not bode well for him. And now I'm pretty sure these guys are thinking that they can win without the conservative wing of the party. That's going to prove difficult in the current. Sure, it's 2 years away, but I don't think that this particular revolt is going to be settled down in 2 years. Things can happen, but I don't see it happening. Now, that being said, we are out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. And you can, you know, find out more about us at www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.